I'm Rico.
And I'm Jessica.
And this is the Always the Critic podcast, where a couple of friends review the latest movies, except we literally have zero qualifications to do so. Jessica, it's a little bit later in the week, but we're still recording because we did see a pretty, I would say, a pretty impactful movie.
I would say that's an understatement. Look.
Yeah, it is.
We haven't watched a movie together in a really long time.
Yes, it's been a long time.
And because of the Oscar nominations coming out, AMC has put all of the Oscar nominees back into theaters if they weren't already in theaters.
Right.
And so we were like, perfect. So it was the first weekend that the Oscar nominees were back in theaters. I booked a ticket to see Zone of Interest with my sister on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you know, I don't think I really want to see that. And I was like, okay, fine. So because I knew the showing was small and it was actually packed, like there weren't that many seats available when I was even getting our tickets, I texted you and I was like, hey, are you free a Saturday by chance? And you were like, yeah. Long story short, you had already bought tickets to see Zone of Interest at the same exact showing as me, in the same exact row as me, in the seat directly next to me.
Yes.
So without, we could planning have never it planned that.
No, we, even if we tried, like, hey, you get your ticket, we'll get our ticket, we would have ended up in completely different seats.
Right.
And everything. But yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, are you busy Saturday? And I said, well, me and Miguel are going to watch the Zone of Interest on Saturday. And right, you're like, oh, cool, what time? And I was like, oh, I got tickets for 1:30. And you were like, me too. And it was like, oh, okay, cool. We're gonna be at the same theater. And then when I told you my seat, you were like, shut up. And
yeah,
then
yeah,
you showed me that it was right next to yours. So yes, we did not plan that at all. And somehow we ended up right next to each other.
It was incredible.
It was. So the Academy Award nominees are out right now. The nominations. Obviously, a lot of stuff has been made about everything going on with it. In particular, the stuff with Barbie. I don't want to rehash that because it's been regurgitated out in the world so much. Obviously, it kind of sucks and it kind of fits into the plot of Barbie itself.
Yeah, it does.
It does. Greta Gerwig, I hope that you get a Best Director nomination soon. Sooner rather than later in your career. Because she's already deserved it twice and hasn't had
it. For Little Women and now for Barbie.
And now for Barbie, exactly. So, but today we are going to talk about, like we said, the Zone of Interest. But before we talk about that movie, first time listening, go ahead and subscribe to your favorite podcast app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. And if you do like us, go ahead and give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. 5 stars goes a long way for us.
Come and check us out on social media to stay up to date on our latest episodes and reviews. You can find us on X, formerly Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Always Critic Pod. And lastly, if you're a fan, please consider becoming a patron. It is such a great way for you to get involved and show your support. You can check out the page on patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. And shout out to our patrons, Janet, Curtis, Bale, CD, Lana, Grace, Lorna, Sammy, Caitlin, Michelle, Tenmei, Adia, Aaron, Marta, Delphia, and Camila. Stop dancing because Rico's over here dancing while I'm reading out the names for the
shout-out. Yeah, I'm dancing. Like, I'm doing a different dance move every time she says a different name. But all seriousness, thank you to the supporters on Patreon. If you're not a supporter, check us out at patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. All right, so let's talk about the Zone of Interest. Jessica, would you mind telling us what this movie's about?
The IMDb synopsis reads, the commandant of Auschwitz, Rudolf Haas, and his wife, Hedwig, strive to build a dream life for their family in a house and garden next to the camp.
Now, this movie is directed by Jonathan Glazer. If you don't know who he is, he also directed Underneath the, Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson. It was a sci-fi movie from the mid-2000s. He was a co-writer on the movie with Martin Amis. And it does star Sandra Hüller as Hedwig and Christian Friedel as Rudolf Haas. So we're keeping it to those two because this movie does focus on these two characters in particular and very strongly. Now, right. This movie has had a very small release to the point that the movie has only made $3 million here in the United States. And when you add its world box office total, it's only 3.2. So it's not that big. But I think it's very important to talk about because of the fact that it is nominated for Best Picture, Best International Film, Best Sound, Best Writing for Adapted Screenplay, and Best Director. It's got a lot of nominations. So I feel pretty strongly that we should talk about this movie. And also, the critics, they kind of like it, Jessica. What did the critics say about it?
It's got a 92% critic score and a 79% audience score. The critics' consensus reads, dispassionately examining the ordinary existence of people complicit in horrific crimes, The Zone of Interest forces us to take a cold look at the mundanity behind an unforgivable brutality. Yes.
So without further ado, Jessica, what do you think of The Zone of Interest?
Yeah, so I had pretty much no idea. I went in really blind. Really blind. I had no idea what this movie was about. I didn't look it up beforehand. I almost didn't even know it was in German with subtitles until I bought the movie ticket and it said German with subtitles. And I was like, oh, bet. So Zone of Interest, I was like, it could be anything. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just kept my mind open. And I cracked a joke when the movie started. I turned to you because the movie starts with, I want to say, several minutes of just sounds, auditory, and yes, a black screen. And I turned to you and I said, I can see why it's nominated for all these Oscars. Because it's like
the pretentiousness,
very pretentious, yes, already. It's very pretentious. And I stick by the joke because it's, I can see why it's nominated, because it is a very haunting look at this family that's living next door to Auschwitz. And this man who looks like, for all intents and purposes, he's just going to a regular 9-to-5 right, job. Living next door to his job. The commute is wonderful. And his wife, he's got 5 lovely kids, you know, and his wife is a homemaker and she has this expansive, yes, garden that she loves and cherishes and takes care of on a daily basis. And it is jarring to see this family live their lives. Are they ignoring the fact that there are blood-curdling screams at all hours of the day and night? Are they ignoring the fact that there's people dying at all hours of the day and night next door? Are they just disassociating to this level, or what? Like, you're taken aback by this totally different viewpoint of the Holocaust.
As soon as the first couple minutes start to run in the movie, and I'm noticing that obviously what you see on screen is like a ideal picturesque view of a family who is living a life of, I would say, not abundance, but they're living a very good, comfortable life.
I would say, yeah, it's, you know, abundance.
When they show a couple of things of what, yeah, actually, you're right, abundance. And, you know, the kids play outside, and just like you were saying, the wife, you know, tends to the home and has a garden. And you have a man who is in the military. He's respected by all the soldiers and everyone around him. And I gotta give it up to the sound in this movie, because
it's gonna win best sound. This is an Oscar-worthy best sound.
Because everything movie that you're seeing on screen is like a picturesque, ideal situation, something that you would dream of, like, this would be my home and whatever. But in the
They have created a utopia next to hell.
That's the that's a perfect way of describing it. A utopia next to hell. Because you hear in the distance, you can hear screaming. You can hear gunshots. It's insane to me how they were able to.
The constant barrage. Constant.
It's never ending. It's always just sitting in the background. Like, they're having a conversation of like, this is the plate that we use for this. But you can hear, like, in the distance, like, there's something happening outside the house. And they are just ignoring it. They have become oblivious to it, like the family. They've tuned it out. And it is jarring. It is upsetting. I'm sitting there and like I would turn and look at you and I'd just be like with my eyes just wide open like, oh my God, I can't believe like they're portraying it.
Yeah. There was a point before we got to the theater, we were talking about, oh, are we going to eat something before and stuff? Because it was a 1:30 p.m. movie. And I was like, no, I already ate, whatever. And I turned to you not long after the movie started. And I said, I'm really glad that I'm not eating right now. Like, because I felt so ill.
While I'm slowly chewing on chicken wings.
And then you got something to eat.
I wasn't, I didn't know.
Because it was a dine-in theater.
But like.
I'm
slowly chewing because like the movie is so quiet.
Quiet.
But it's for a reason. It's to like really impact what it's trying to drive at. The performances in this movie are cold, but like very well done. You have, of course, I think Sandra Hüller as Hedwig is the standout just because of you see her interactions and the way she wants to live her life and what she has now grown accustomed to and what she expects now as a homemaker, and you know, her interactions with her kids and with her, I want to say servants is probably the correct term, because
yeah, they're from the nearby town.
Yeah, so said. Obviously, Christian Friedel as Commandant Haas it's a very good performance. And there's a moment that I want to talk about that I think we're going to have a lot of thoughts on near the end.
What's I think also like pushes the envelope is that these people are not cruel. Like, you don't see them being cruel.
You never see them in the middle of the action, like, doing something to other human beings.
The type of cruelty is so nonchalant as to be, like, every day. Like, it's so ingrained that when they're having conversations of like that rotating mechanism that they've invented for the furnace system to extinguish people. He's like, walk me through this thing again. Like, everything's matter of fact, like business.
It's almost all business. As if he was asking, like, you know, on a factory line of cars, like, oh, tell me how this step, like, explain this to me. But instead of, you know, like a car line factory, it's furnaces.
Right.
Oh my God. It's...
So there were multiple times where I just felt queasy and completely uncomfortable and uneasy. It is not a movie that is for the faint of heart, no. I think it's a completely unexpected. I think it's very audacious, and the party trick is the sound design. It is.
Do not watch, man. This is a movie that I don't feel like you can watch at home and get its full effect.
No, because I walked out of the theater. I said another joke. I was like, I haven't felt this way about a quiet movie. Like, that it was so quiet I was scared to breathe because my breathing would be too loud. Yes. Since First Man. Because First Man was like that. It was like very quiet. You could hear a pin drop in the theater. And this was like that. And we have managed to have a very unencumbered theater experience. We didn't have Godzilla playing next door. We didn't have some other action movie playing nearby or a Taylor Swift or Mean Girls Eras Tour musical playing next door.
Thank God.
Nothing. It was like no other theaters around us were playing anything. And so when we say it was quiet, it was like the true sound of silence mixed in with this sound design, which was the gunshots, the screaming, the crying, the mortifying sounds of the fucking Holocaust. Like, you know, it's like bien impresionante. Like, I was telling my sister when I came home, I was like, it was bien impresionante. It's very unlike any other Holocaust movie because they do not show the brutality.
No. Oof.
You hear the brutality.
And I'm not going to sit here and say that's worst. But what I will say is it is affecting. It is affecting the way they use that. Like you called it a party trick. And I would agree that it is something that while something is happening on screen, sometimes you'll be ignoring what they're saying because just in that background, like you'll hear screaming and it gets stopped by a sound of a bullet. And it's just like, oh my God. Like,
because there's two stories being told at the same time.
And I can't wait to.
What are you going to pay attention to? Are you going to pay attention to what they're saying? Which is what they're also paying attention to what's going on in their lives, in their periphery. They don't give a shit. Or are you going to pay attention to the story that's behind the wall? It's very convicting of the audience.
What I do enjoy is that visually, we get a lot of like beautiful shots, almost painting-like shots of these people living in their home. The commandant in his office, you know, talking either on the phone or writing a letter. You have Hedwig at one point is trying on this mink coat, which we'll talk about. You know, and also a haunting shot as well is like the use of color sometimes in this movie. Like the color red is used at one point, and just the way the camera is pointed at Hedwig's mother at one point, it's just haunting. So this movie does such an incredible job of, hey, audience, we're going to show you something, but something else is going to be happening at the same time. Choose which one you want to pay attention to. And that's a lot. That's a loaded thing to ask an audience to do. And I gotta give shout out to Jonathan Glazer for portraying that. Before we get into our spoilers and really like dive deep on certain things, are there any other points that you want to talk about before we get into it?
There's certain things that I think we should definitely talk about.
Okay, sounds good. So then we will go ahead and we are going to talk about spoilers for The Zone of Interest right after this.
The greatest trick.
Houston, we have a problem.
I am your father.
I see dead people.
The devil ever pulled.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Was convincing the world.
You can't handle the truth.
He didn't exist.
Oh, what's in the box?
All right, let's go ahead and let's talk about spoilers for The Zone of Interest. Where do you want to start?
I thought the mom Hedwig was a spy when she received that mink coat and was like trying it on and like almost looking through it, rifling through it, trying to find stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, is she looking for communique? Is she trying to like, yeah, this was where my mind was at. I was like, oh, she's married to the commander of Auschwitz, but she's somehow good.
You were trying to like figure out something else about the movie.
Because I didn't know. Like I had no idea.
Not the case at all.
So not the case at all. What had happened was she found a lipstick, a used lipstick in the mink coat. tries on the shade, and then puts it in her belongings. The coat, the lipstick, all of it is from the camp.
Yep.
Spoils of war.
The spoils of war.
Stolen.
Oh, my God. When she's trying it on, and it's the coldness.
It did something to me.
Because right before that, like, there's, like, all this, like, clothing that she puts on the table, and she tells her maids or whatever they are, everybody can pick one article. Pick one.
One thing each, yeah.
One thing each. So, obviously, she's just gathering stuff from the camp. And it's just so cold-hearted how they're going about it. That's one of them. That's one
the
scene.
The toothpaste was another thing.
Yes, when the ingenuity of these people is how she kind of, like, insinuated on it. It's like...
I think it was a friend that had come over to the house and was talking about, I found this diamond ring in a tube of toothpaste.
Yes. And then, the ingenuity of these people. So I bought a bunch of toothpaste because you never know. Which...
The fucking audacity.
Yeah.
It's making you, like, sick.
It does.
And because that's cruel.
And when they did the overhead shot of seeing the chamber on the blueprint.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I was like, no.
Yes.
Oh, this is just, this is dark.
Yeah.
But the most affecting shot for me, and it involves the chamber, right? It is from when Commandant Haas is outside. He's smoking a cigarette.
This is the one that I turned. This is the shot that I turned to you and I said, I'm glad I'm not eating anything.
Yes. And so you see, they show an angle where he's like looking off in the distance, but you see the house behind him. And then they change the angle so you see what he's looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out in his backyard next to the pool. And then you can just see the column and then the smokestack coming out. And it's like, oh, shit. He is looking.
And the screams.
Yeah, and the screams. You can hear them. And just the full, like, encapsulation of everything that they've built towards with that. We saw the blueprints. We saw everything. And now here it is to fruition in his backyard. And he's just looking off, like, after a long day's work. You know, I'm having a cigarette in my backyard. I just did my job. It was a long day at work.
Proud even. Yeah. And I was telling you this in the theater because we had to, like, sit there and just process after the movie was over. But, you know, Haas is an interesting figure because they paint him as a naturalist.
Yes.
He loves nature, loves plants, loves to take his children out into nature. And, you know, they gift him a boat for his birthday, and they have him out here tending to the plants. The wife is like, we wanted to farm when we, you know, our plan was always to get out basically from the city and be in nature and farm and raise our kids out in the countryside. And he is shown on the phone bitching out somebody, like, giving them orders to basically heavily punish anyone who destroys the lilac bushes.
Yeah.
And using language as if it is a person, as if the lilac bush, the lilac flowers, like making the bush bleed. Like, he said stuff like that. Anyone who makes the bush bleed will blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, he's in love with it, like in love with nature.
That's not the only time.
No. He loves plants and animals.
Yeah.
Places them way higher than human life.
Yeah, we get a great example of that when he has been reassigned and he's going to be leaving Auschwitz. They're putting him as a deputy for somewhere else. And the first interaction where he finally tells his wife, they're having like a swimming party outside. He tells his wife, he goes off to the lake or the river, that he's constantly going to. And there is a coldness between the two of them. Like, he's speaking very matter-of-factly to his wife, like, I have to leave. And I tried to stay. I tried to get an impassioned letter of recommendation to stay. But this is just the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, his wife is like, well, I'm not leaving. This is our home. And that the way she was speaking about it really made me feel like I was out in that moment. I was, you know how you sometimes watch movies and stuff, like, we have to protect our home. This is where we live. We're not going to be pushed out. You know, you've seen like many, many characterizations of that type of sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt so different when she did it, because you know the horror that's happening. Right across, right over that wall. She staked
the claim here.
Yeah. She is like, this is my home.
She planted a flag here.
Yeah. Here.
Here.
Where, you know,
10 feet away from Auschwitz.
Oh, my God. And, but they are dead set on like, okay, then you're going to stay here. I'm going to go off and do my work. And then right after that, we see him in the barn playfully holding his horse, the face, and talking to the horse as if it were a person, is like, I'm truly going to miss you, you know, and just like, you know, really getting like emotional with that horse, something that we don't see with his own family.
Mm-hmm. With his own wife.
With his own wife. We don't see him compassionate. We don't see him with that sympathy. But with a horse, he has that come out from him. It's insane. It's insane what we're seeing.
So out of whack.
I want to talk about when Hedwig's mother comes. I want to say it's Hedwig's mother.
Yes, it is.
And so she comes to stay over because, you know, they invite her over and everything. And, you know, she is observing the house. You know, you guys are doing well for yourselves. But then, you know, she starts noticing things about the lifestyle, and not just the lifestyle.
Small horrors that yes. they are experiencing,
and there's
living next door to Auschwitz. And the mom is not about that life.
No, three moments that encapsulate this perfectly. When Hedwig's giving the tour, they're outside, and Hedwig like points out, "Oh yeah, that's the wall that you know between us and the camp. I'm trying to grow." Like trees to cover that wall.
Yeah, flowers.
Trying to grow flowers so we could cover that wall. So speaking so like, I don't like the way it looks.
Like if it was curtains.
Yeah, like, oh my God, right? And then that's one. The second one is like while Hedwig and...
Like it's just some unpleasantness that's happening.
It really is. While the Commandant and Hedwig are having their discussion, we see from the pool party, the grandmother, she like wakes up. She's like, she fell asleep on like the little chair. And when she opens her eyes, she's opening her eyes at sunset and she sees like the columns and the smoke coming out of it. And you can see like this look in her eye like, oh my God, what is happening here?
She's a bit horrified.
She is.
And confused.
But the crowning moment is at night when we have her in the bedroom, right? And all of a sudden the room goes red. And it's because they are lighting the chambers at night as well. And the fire, once like the exhaust opens, you see the fire. And so she goes up to the window. She opens up that curtain and she's just looking in horror at what she's seeing. And that is such an affecting shot because you can see like the way they frame it, they're facing the house. She's looking through the window and in the reflection of the window, you see that fire column just keep burning. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh my God, it's an incredible, looking shot, but it's a horrific shot. And she had enough. She was
She fucking washed her hands, Pontius Pilate, and dipped. She didn't say goodbye.
No, she left didn't wait note. Till
morning.
Nope. Not at all.
She left in the middle of the night.
Yep. She left a note.
Gone.
And Hedwig, you know, looking for the mother, and then she finds the note. She takes that note, just shoves it in a drawer, and goes back to eating her breakfast. Basically, it's like, fine, she left. I'm living my life. You see them
start to threaten the help.
Yes.
And those presumably have a weaker status around them.
Yeah, for sure.
The deeper you go into the movie. And you're like, oh, these people just, it like emanates from them.
Which is, oof.
They don't even think about it.
No, they don't. It's just, it comes natural.
It's disgusting.
Oof. That is sick and insane. Okay, there's a big moment that I think we should probably talk about.
Same thing with the shoes. That was the second part that I got. I was like queasy. Was he shows up with some visitors, and I think it's right before that when they show him the blueprints of the chamber. And he takes off his boots outside before he comes into the house. And they're like, oh, should we take off our shoes too before we go? And he's like, no, 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 that's fine. Some worker comes out of nowhere, takes the boots, and starts washing them in the trough by the front of the house.
Yeah.
And it's just blood. Blood coming off the shoes. And that put me in a foul place. Because, again, it's the nonchalance. Like, no, 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 you don't need to take off your shoes. Like,
if it almost, to them, feels mundane.
Yes.
Crazy. Crazy. There's only one time where we see the commandant inside of Auschwitz, but the angle that they shoot from up or from down, they shoot up so you can see him, his face, and you see the sky. You don't really see anything else except, like, you hear commands being given in the background, you hear the commotion, then smoke starts to fill the screen around him. And that's the only time you see him, like, at work. And again, it's just, and his demeanor there's he's just doing his job.
There's nothing there.
There's nothing.
There's nothing to latch on to.
Man.
Anyway, so where do you want to go from here? Because I thought we covered the shoes, we covered Hedwig, we covered the house, and I don't know. Like, the kids growing up in this, they're all fucked up, no doubt.
Yes. So what I want to cover, I think this.
But they want to shield the kids, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They want to shield the kids somewhat from this, which I think is kind of funny.
I know. Like, okay, sure. Like, let's pretend like this is a normal life. And you even get a sense of it when the kids go to school. Because you see the outside of the house and they run out and they're like going to school, and it looks like a normal neighborhood, but the way the house is set up. But then the camera just swivels just a little bit to the left and you see the gates. It's the dichotomy of having like this idyllic life versus one of the most horrific things that has ever happened in humanity.
It feels like a piece of like Aryan fucking propaganda outside the gates of Auschwitz.
Yeah. Oof. So.
This is how we're supposed to live. Like, you know.
Yeah. You know, you're going to have a family. You're going to have a big home. You're going to
have land. Kids. You can, you know, grow your own food. And.
Okay.
It's anyway.
Because I don't want to keep harping on how doom and gloom it is. It is. It's a very...
But you're more of like a fly on the wall.
Yeah. You're not being forced into the irrepressible or the horrific actions. Because we don't see the actions. We just hear. And we get the sense of the action of what's taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is, before we talk about like... awards chances or anything like that. I want to focus on the ending. Yes. So Commandant Haas, he's out basically in the field. He's in this ballroom with what I would assume are Nazi sympathizers. They're doing some type of gala, some type of ball. And he's just roaming around in that gala, in that ballroom. And you can tell, like, his mind is at work while he's, like, roaming around. And then they cross-cut it with him talking to his wife on the phone. And the conversation they have is...
Fucked.
Yes.
Fucked up.
Yeah. This is where we hear Commandant Haas basically... how he would kill all those people in that room.
She asks him who was in the room, who was there at the party. He says, I don't know. I couldn't really get a name. I didn't really recognize anybody because I was too busy thinking of how I would kill everybody in the room.
Yeah.
How I'd gas everybody in the room. And it'd be a very difficult, you know, job because of how high the ceilings are.
That's where his mind was.
That's what he was thinking of. And you know what? I knew that's what he was thinking of. Did you guess that that was what he was thinking
of? I didn't
of?
Think that's what he was guessing, but looking back at it now, like the way he was like looking up at the architecture and kind of like he's trying to figure something out. I didn't clock it.
When I was like, he's thinking of how to murder everybody.
And that's exactly what he says to his own wife.
Yeah.
And then his wife is like, all right, I'll see you when you come
She's
home.
Not seeing red flags.
No, she's a red flag herself.
She's like, it's late, hon. Like, she's like,
I gotta go feed the kids.
She's like, I need to get some sleep.
Yeah, that's her response to like, hey, I think I've figured out a way of how to kill all these people in this room, but it's gonna be really difficult. Oh, that's great, honey. I'm gonna go to bed.
Yeah,
just that's the way Literally. The conversation pretty much goes. And so then he starts going down the stairs. He's like...
But they had just said that the operation of...
Yes.
Of, what is it? Like extinguishing the Jews was named after him.
Operation Haas.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
And he was, you know, marveling at that with his wife on the phone. They hung up and he starts walking down the stairs. Mind you, they made a point in the movie of him having a physical and everything is A-okay. He's healthy as a horse, has no gastrointestinal issues. So, pick it up.
So, at one point, he reaches a certain level on the stairs and the hallway that he's in is really, like, just creepy to me. The light is only kind of shining in that spotlight of where the stairs are. And at the end of the hallway, there is nothing. It's dark. It's black. And he looks the other way. Same thing.
He's retching before he even gets to that point on the stairs.
Yeah, you hear him just like...
He's like... like
at the point of wanting to vomit.
Yeah.
And
you're
now,
like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah, what's going on there? And then smash cut to present day. Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
Two people are going in. They're cleaning up, you know, kind of getting the memorial, like the actual location kind of ready for people to come.
Mm-hmm. For visitors.
And the shots that they choose to show of like all the different shoes of people.
Rooms of canes.
Yep. Articles of clothing, articles of personal belongings to people that were here and were left
behind.
And
the shoes are children's shoes as well.
Yes. There's so many pairs of children's shoes, which was devastating to see. Like, it was...
And presented without comment.
Without comment. It's just...
No dialogue. Just these people who no doubt work at Auschwitz today. Just cleaning up, preparing for another day of
visitors. You
know, visiting the people visiting this memorial, this historic site, you know. And again, very impresionante. I don't have like another word to describe it other than the Spanish word impresionante. What's an equivalent word? Impactful?
Impactful, I guess, is like an equivalent word. Impresionante. Man,
Don't hurt yourself.
No. It leaves an impression on you.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of almost like the literal translation. That it does leave an impression on you. And then it cuts back to the commandant, kind of like looking off into the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And you had an interpretation of it, which I found pretty interesting. What were you saying to me about that?
I said, as we were sitting in the theater, that I think Commandant, after having this crazy phone call with his wife and being very proud that his name is on this project, felt some sort of weight, like disgust, maybe in the pit of his soul, and was looking out into the future, like, and thought maybe this is gonna be bad. Like, this might not look right to the future.
Right. Like, the future is judging him. You kind of used it as that term.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting way of viewing that entire sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I felt as though he had finally come to terms with what everything he's been doing has led up to. And once his name was on it, then it became...
He was sickened.
Yeah. Because now everything that has happened in terms of the countless bodies that have been, you know, thrown into furnaces, the countless people who have been murdered, now people can look and be like, Haas, the man who is pretty much the reason that all of this started in terms of like this operation. And I think it finally dawned on him. I am responsible
for the weight of history.
This death. I can't imagine having that become something.
Or not even the weight of history, the weight of the future.
Mm-hmm. Oh, ooh.
Oof. Just kind of making him retch in the hallway.
Yeah, because it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's a powerful movie.
There's no wrong answer for the way that is.
That sequence, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can interpret it the way you want to. But obviously there was finally a reaction to what he was doing. So, powerful movie.
And then the closing credits with the most haunting vocal.
Yeah.
Stylings I've ever heard. 0 out of 10 would recommend.
Okay, if listening. You had to give it a letter grade in terms of the movie itself.
So I am caught between I never want to watch this movie again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I can recommend this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
Two. It's very audacious and brilliant.
It is. That's why I think I would give it, like, I would honestly probably give it an A-, and then immediately just crumple it up and throw it in the garbage. Like, I don't need to see that again.
Yes.
It was well done. It is incredible movie making. And the telling of that side of the war.
Uh-huh.
But thank you for showing me. Now I never need to know again.
Right.
So, yeah. So,
excuse me while I go throw up.
Exactly. Now, I do not think it'll win Best Picture. I don't think it wins Best Director. It has a good shot at International Feature Film. Because...
I don't know. We still haven't seen Anatomy of a Fall.
Right. That's
haven't seen Sociedad de la Nieve.
Right. That's also true.
Which is strong. Let me tell you. Strong. And I don't think it's going to win Best Writing.
No, because of the just based on the category itself.
Yeah, the category. But best sound?
I mean, I think that has to
win. I thought Oppenheimer was a lock, bro.
Zone of Interest showed up and it's like...
Zone of Interest, like, yeah.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting race in a couple of those categories. So out of the Best Picture nominees, how many have you seen now? Because if we want to list them off real quick, the Best Picture nominees. So
we Best Picture. Okay, so we have American Fiction, mm-hmm. Anatomy of a Fall, mm-hmm. Barbie, mm-hmm. The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, Zone of Interest.
Okay. So
I've seen all of them except American Fiction and Anatomy of a Fall. So two.
I believe I'm at three with American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, and Maestro. Maestro, I can knock that out pretty soon. But American Fiction, I'm very interested in. So I'm excited to check that out. And Anatomy of a Fall, thank God it's coming back because I missed it the first time around anyway.
Mm-hmm, so, same.
And that one also stars the same woman that's in this movie, Sandra Hüller.
I know.
So she's in
two. I can't wait to see it.
She's in two Best Picture nominees in the same year.
I know what she did.
Nice. I know what she did. Okay. So... If you've watched The Zone of Interest, please let us know what you think of it. How did it make you feel watching this movie, watching this horrific, you know, interpretation of the war in World War II? And if you want to let us know, that's on the socials at Always Critic Pod. You know, that's X, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. If this is your first time listening, thank you so much for checking us out. I know this is a pretty strong movie, and I know a lot of people haven't seen it, but if you have seen it and you're listening to us, thank you for checking us out. You know, maybe you want more voices or interpretations of it. Go ahead and subscribe on your favorite podcast app, so that way you could check out more episodes in the future. So Always the Critic Podcast. And finally, if you've done all that, if you've been listening to us for a long time, go ahead and check out our Patreon, patreon.com/alwayscriticpod. You can support us that way for as little as $2 a month. That's less than a cup of coffee. And I know because I drink a lot of coffee. And even the cheap stuff like Dunkin' Donuts is more than $2. So you can help support this show for less than a cup of Dunkin' Donuts. So
okay, Ben Affleck.
Yo.
Invoking Dunkin' Donuts.
Yo, did you see the last photo of him like with holding all the... boxes with like two Dunkin' Donuts cups? Like, he's got to be doing this on purpose. Like, why why is he putting himself through all of that? Anyway, love Ben Affleck. All right, so that has been our show. I'm Rico,
and I'm Jessica, and this has been the Always the Critic Podcast.